Pat Stafford. Michael! Jack Michael!
Different level. I don't know the rules anymore or something's changed, but I can't believe it.
It's a 4-0 goal. Big cheer. Are you kidding me? What is that?
It's NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve Hockey Crew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
And Wheeler curls into toward the corner, got it up towards center ice for Laine. Kwase's pass on the near side, in stride, picked up there by Ehlers. He'll shoot it in. It took a funny bounce, out in front, and a shot, it stopped, rebound, they score! Oh, wow, Blake Wheeler will get his second of the night to tie it with 32 seconds left. Oh, my! Perreault trying to keep it alive, he lost it. Now it's a breakaway, moving in, Johnson shoots, and scores! Eric Johnson, the defenseman, took a pass, walked in from the blue line all alone, and beat Hellebuck. Colorado, for the second straight game against Winnipeg, wins it in overtime.
That's how last night sounded from the arena in Denver. Our good buddy Paulie Edmonds with the call. Blake Wheeler tying the game up with that goal with 33 seconds to play. Eric Johnson winning it for the Avs with 9.9 seconds to play in overtime. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. I wish you all a happy new year and welcome to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor with you in studio for the next couple of hours. Lots on the Winnipeg Jets, lots on the World Juniors. We'll look around the NHL as well. Shawnee, happy new year to you, buddy. Good to see you on this Wednesday evening. We've been off for a couple weeks, so yeah. It's nice to get back in the swing of things here on this Wednesday evening.
Absolutely. Happy new year to you as well. I barely recognized you when you walked into the studio. You're looking streamlined. No beard.
I shaved the beard. I thought I'd start the new year with a new Drew, but I'm going to grow the beard right back because it's just too damn cold to not have significant facial hair right now outside in Winnipeg. Shawnee, I'm getting too old for this cold weather. I think I really need to start wintering somewhere in the southern U.S. I just can't handle it anymore.
It's killing me. And my folks are going to Southeast Asia next
Southeast
week.
Asia?
So, yeah, so they're rubbing. They want my itinerary from when I went. So they're like, I have to vicariously take them through my own trip when I went.
Yeah.
And now I'm just get to watch and look at all the videos and pics of this now, the tropical, glorious weather.
The question I have for you is, did you give them your real itinerary or did you give them the parent-approved itinerary?
I gave them the itinerary I made for them on the plane back from Southeast Asia.
This is what I did. Yeah. Don't ask for any pictures. They don't exist.
This file is protected by password. You can't get it.
There you go. We started, of course, with last night in Denver, the Winnipeg Jets dropping that 3-2 decision to the Colorado Avalanche. Down 2-0, the Winnipeg Jets were entering the third period. And it looked like the Jets might not be able to pull it out. They get the early third period goal. Blake Wheeler getting the tip on the Patrick Laine shot on the power play. And the Jets are pressing for the rest of the period. And just when it looks like it might be a little too late, the weird bounce off the stanchion on the dump in. Blake Wheeler in front. They're hacking and smacking away at the puck. He's finally able to get it past Jonathan Bernier. And the Jets send the game into overtime.
What a crazy third period it was. You heard the excitement in Paul Edmonds' voice. I thought that was just a perfect summation of everything that took place yesterday in the third period. Jets absolutely pouring on the pressure in the third. Listening back to the audio after the game last night, Josh Morrissey in our post-game interview saying that he really didn't like the Jets' second period specifically. He said the team was not moving their feet, wasn't quick to pucks, wasn't quick to win the battles, help each other out. And then he said they really they flipped the switch going into the third period. And what more can you say about Captain Blake Wheeler putting the team on his back, scoring both those goals, and just pouring his heart and soul into that period to force the overtime and get a pretty important point that you got to think, Drew, last year or years prior, they don't walk out of that building with a point.
Oh, I would agree with that assessment. It's just the there's something different about this team this year that allows them, much like they did in the last year they made the playoffs, the only year they made the playoffs, that allows them to get those points where it looks like it's you know, they're going to come up on the short end of things, that the bounces aren't going to go their way. They were the better of the two teams, I thought, last night. You know, they dominated the possession game. But, you know, anytime the Jets are down 2-0, you still think, okay, you know, it was 1-0. They get the goal the Avalanche do on the sloppy play in the Jets' own zone. Nathan MacKinnon gets the goal there. Then the Avs follow that up, you know, with the Mikko Rantanen goal, and you mentioned that Josh Morrissey wasn't happy about the way the Jets played in the second period because they, you know, they were the better of the two teams in the first, and then I don't know if they let their guard down or they just sort of that key attention to detail. This isn't the Colorado Avalanche team that we saw last year, mm-hmm. where you don't need that attention to detail and you're still able to beat them. This Avs team is much improved. They can, well, get the puck out of their own zone, which is a nice starting point. I mean, Sam Girard looks great on their blue line.
Very impressive.
Yeah. Nathan MacKinnon looks like he's
beyond impressive.
Well, I mean, he's back to being the Nathan MacKinnon you expected him to be when he was the first overall draft pick. He'd had some down years when the whole entire organization had down years. He now looks like he's, you know, a perennial top flight NHL player. And so it was great on the Jets to stick with it in the third period, maybe find another level when the Paul Maurice shortened the bench. Mm-hmm. You know, only down to three lines for the majority of the third period, only going with five defensemen. Ben Chiarot didn't get a lot of ice time in the third period as the Jets pushed for that equalizer, and they were finally able to get it there on that with that 33 seconds to go.
Yeah, and you talked about shortening the bench, and it was really interesting. I was just thinking of some of the storylines surrounding this game, and something that we haven't really said a lot this year regarding the Winnipeg Jets is that, and I'm going to try to word this properly, they have a fourth line now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not a fourth line of Matthew Perreault, Joel Armia, and Matt Hendricks. It's a fourth line of Sean Mathias, Marco Dano, and Matt Hendricks.
Sure.
And that is more of your prototypical fourth line that you're reluctant to kind of put out there in those situations.
Well, it's a function of the injuries.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. But that's what I'm saying. The injuries have kind of, like, I'm curious if the Jets had a healthy roster, would they be less reluctant to roll four lines in a situation like that?
Well, if everybody was healthy and, you know, if Scheifele was up the middle and Wheeler mm-hmm. was on the wing, then the Jets probably, you know, don't need to shorten the bench maybe as early in the period as possible. When you're down a goal, or when you're down two goals starting a period, you're always going to ride your horses more mm-hmm. than when you're, you know, tied or when you're up in a game. That's just the reality of the situation. So it's no surprise that they shortened the bench. Now, they probably shortened it a bit earlier because of all the injuries than they would have, say, 3 weeks ago mm-hmm. or a month ago when they had the quote-unquote best fourth line in hockey, when Matthew Perreault was playing that role that he was clear that he's clearly, you know, a better player than the role he was going with at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matthew Perreault, unfortunately, on the ice in overtime during the breakaway for Eric Johnson. And
how much stock do you put into the Jets' overtime record? So, I mean, obviously it's disappointing because you never would like to leave points on the board. But, you know, if you're a coach, if you're Paul Maurice, are you sitting there really, you know, worried about your overtime record when the 3-on-3 is such a different animal? I mean, think about how many scoring chances the Jets had in that 3-on-3 overtime. And for whatever reason, they just haven't been able to capitalize on those opportunities. You know, Dustin Byfuglien gets his great opportunity on the breakaway, gets it through Jonathan Bernier, but it squeaks out, you know, the other side.
Mm-hmm.
So are you just sort of shrugging your shoulders about the Jets' overtime record? Or is this something that you're spending time concerned with?
I don't know if concern is the right word. Would you like to see them maybe possess the puck a little more, be, you know, a little less hesitant to maintain possession, exit the offensive zone, maintain possession of the puck, maybe get a line change in? Paul Maurice talked about that post-game, how they kind of held possession for a couple shifts and allowed the Avalanche to change, get a full change in. The Jets, meanwhile, he's talked about it, how they go for the jugular right off the bat, and that combined with a shortened bench and the guys going out there with the mentality, we got to win this and we got to win this now.
Mm-hmm.
It sets up for opportunities for the other team, but it's 3-on-3 overtime. You miss one opportunity, the puck is going the other way quicker than you can even turn around.
It's hard. I mean, you know, you obviously have to counter the risk reward factor, but when there's, you know, 3-on-3 and you know, let's say it's, you almost can't be too passive, because if mm-hmm. you're too passive, there's so much space, you might get bit if you're too passive. You don't want to be too aggressive because you get bit on the other way. But if I had to err one way or the other, I'd rather be too aggressive than too passive when it comes to 3-on-3 overtime. My big bugaboo about overtime is that the NHL continues to treat overtime victories the same as regulation victories when it comes to tiebreakers in the standings. I mean, I've spoken about this on this show before. I've spoken about it on the IC Saturday show before. We had Chris King on a number of years ago when 3-on-3 overtime was just being introduced. And we asked him, why is it that the tiebreaker for, you know, at the end of the season to break ties in the standings is regulation and overtime wins when there's really no comparison. Mm-hmm. Regulation time and overtime look nothing alike. They're two different games entirely. And he said back then that that's something the NHL should take a look at and maybe look at changing. Nothing's happened since then. So from my perspective, the fact that a team gets the same tiebreaker status when you win a game in overtime as you do when you win a game in the 60 minutes is something that the NHL should probably change. I mean, the Jets have 22 regulation and overtime wins. We know what the record is in overtime. Mm-hmm. That's 22 regulation time victories.
Yeah, exactly.
Meanwhile, a team, and I don't have the information in front of me, but I'm sure there's some teams who've done tremendously well in the 3-on-3 overtime who are boosting up their tiebreaker as a result of that. And I think that's an area that the NHL should really look at changing to really, you're not, they refuse to reward a team with 3 points for a regulation win. And I understand why that is, so they can keep this, you know, competitiveness and that everybody's in it right till the last week of the season, even though it's a complete and total fraud and everybody can see right through it. But you need to change the tiebreaker so you really do put an emphasis on getting the win in that 60 minutes.
I completely agree, because we've seen this a lot, especially down the stretch where teams just kind of take that foot off the gas when points are at a premium come February, March, mm-hmm. and they kind of look at each other and go, let's just get this to OT, and then we'll see what happens after that.
It's something that the NHL should look at. They're not going to, because they never listen to me, despite everything I, you know, everything I say is gold.
All your strong-worded emails you send them.
Yeah, you know, they just keep, I think they must have blocked my email is what happened
straight
in this case.
Straight to
the trash. Yeah, it's just an automatic delete button on those.
I would like to see Josh Morrissey play more overtime minutes. I will say that.
I thought the usage of Byfuglien in overtime was peculiar in that it's his first game back from a fairly lengthy absence. You're playing up in Denver, which has, of course, got the thin air.
And it's funny you say that, because I asked Josh Green, who was doing our show with us last night, I asked him point blank, I said, is it really that intense? Like, how hard is it when you're up there? And he goes, he looked me right in the eye and goes, it is something else.
So
it's real.
So you have a...
And you got a guy like Dustin Byfuglien coming back from injury.
Mm-hmm.
Not the epitome of conditioning, we'll say. He's a big man and he's in shape, but we've all watched it over the years. 25 minutes, 11 seconds for a guy who Maury said was going to manage his minutes.
Yeah, it's a bit bizarre, the usage. And I understand why Paul Maurice probably goes back to him, because, you know, you ride your horses. Mm-hmm. But it's not like Josh Morrissey is still a rookie defenseman in the league. He's been able to obviously be a tremendous shutdown defenseman alongside Jacob Trouba. I would have liked to see Morrissey out there a little bit more in overtime. I would agree with that assessment. I'm not going to rip my hair out because of it. I don't have that much hair left anyways. I need to keep all
keep
of it.
Yeah, keep that.
Yeah, keep, you know. But it's peculiar. It's something that definitely is a talking point the day after.
I will say this. After the turnover, but you see Byfuglien, you see that split second where he's thinking, go or stay, and he goes, and Kyle Connor, a rookie, sees a guy like Dustin Byfuglien, a leader in the room, wears the A, returning from injury, going, there's no second thought in his mind to get him the puck, when really, Kyle Connor was in a position to push it forward, turn on his burners, and then you have a forward going in on a breakaway as opposed to a defenseman, and we saw a little bit of lazy Buff on some of the back checks.
You know, the shifts were just too long, probably, in overtime, and that's something that the team will obviously look to try and clean that up a bit. Ultimately, at the end of the day, they extend their point streak to 4 games.
Big point.
You know, it's a big point against a division rival. You know, sure, you'd rather win sure you'd rather win in regulation, but being down 2-0 starting the third period to get 1 point out of it, most fans are probably going to be okay with that.
And luckily, 5-on-5 overtime only
in the playoffs.
Yeah.
In the playoffs. Hit you're right about that. When we come back, we're going to look back at the month of December for the Winnipeg Jets and preview the rest of the month of January. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Cleared ahead for Scheifele, and Scheifele ahead for Kyle Connor. Connor at the empty net, scores!
And Connor Hellebuyck will win his 21st game in style. He'll get his third shutout of the season, the ninth of his career, as he stops all 35 Oilers shots. And the Winnipeg Jets sweep the three-game series against Edmonton with a 5-0 victory.
The month of December for the Winnipeg Jets started with that victory over the Vegas Golden Knights. Kyle Connor iced it with that empty netter. The month of December ended in Edmonton with that 5-0 shellacking of the Oilers on New Year's Eve. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We'll look back at the month of December for the Winnipeg Jets, look ahead to the remainder of the month of January. But first, this segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Sean, quickly, as we look back at December to start, sort of a tale of two months for the Jets. They started off the month pretty strong. Mm-hmm. That win at home against the Vegas Golden Knights. Then they followed that up with that absolute demolishing game against the Senators. Mm-hmm. Then they went on the road. And that's when they sort of got into the bit of the lull that we saw in the middle of the month of December for the Jets. That 1-4-1 stretch from December 5th through the 16th, those two losses, you remember, in Detroit and then in Florida, the overtime defeat against the Lightning. Come home, you win a game, then you lose to the Blackhawks on home ice, and you lose to the Blues on home ice, in St. Louis as well. So you're starting okay, then you're getting a little bit of a dip, and then, of course, you end it strong with the three-game winning streak at the end of the month, beating the Oilers twice and the Islanders as well. So, you know, all in all, the month of December, not terrible for the Winnipeg Jets, certainly not fantastic, but you'll take an 8-5-2 record where you win more than half your games and you get, you know, the loser point in a couple of them as well, as we look back at the month of December.
Yeah, when I was going over researching for this segment, I literally couldn't believe how many storylines there were in this month. So mm-hmm. You just broke down the schedule, absolutely. Some big wins for the Jets, some big losses, some disappointing ones, some really entertaining games. I thought the Tampa Bay game, despite the results, was an unbelievably entertaining game to watch.
Sure.
As two of the premier teams in the league going at it. Overtime, we got to see Mikhail Sergachev. Mm-hmm. Essentially, so therefore we get to mock Montreal. That's always enjoyable. Interesting little observation. Every Sunday that the Jets played in December was a shutout win.
Ah, there you go. How about
that? Sunday.
Sundays.
What a great day.
Apparently the Jets love playing on Sundays is what it boils down to in that regard. 4-0 the Jets were against the Pacific Division, so that's where they made the most of their hay. Mm-hmm. Of course, two victories against the Edmonton Oilers, the win against the Vancouver Canucks as well, and that win against the Vegas Golden Knights. So, you know, an okay month for the Winnipeg Jets, the month of December was. Looking ahead now, this month of January is sort of an interesting one for the Jets. Obviously, they started with the overtime defeat last night in Denver, but you have a couple of significant lulls in the schedule this month. You have the bye week, which is coming up in a couple weeks' time, where the Jets have those 5 days off, and then you also have the All-Star break in the month of January. So it's 11 games this month, 10 more after they played last night in Denver. So it's not an especially busy month by any stretch of the imagination. So for a Jets team that is a little banged up, clearly with, you know, Scheifele out of the lineup, with Enstrom still out of the lineup, you know,
Tanev.
Brandon Tanev going to be out of the lineup for a couple weeks by the sounds of things. Mm-hmm. The month of January and its sort of relaxed schedule has come at a pretty decent time.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you're going to get two league-mandated breaks in a month and play 11 games throughout that stretch, to have your number one centerman go down as that majority of your portion, mm-hmm. it's some silver lining right there. And I just want to go back to December for a bit because we're touching on these injuries. I mean, they started the month minus Toby Enstrom. Went down November 18th in the New Jersey game.
Right.
And so they figure, okay, one of our top puck movers is out for the month. How can we kind of move forward? And Ben Sherratt playing admirably. And then they just started to pile up. Bufflin goes out during the Tampa Bay game. Mark Scheifele, I believe it was on the, if I have it incorrectly, Edmonton the 27th. On the 27th. And Brandon Tanev the 29th right after. So the Jets took a hit in December with regards to their roster.
Yeah.
And
every team's going to run through injuries. Mm-hmm. I mean, and we've seen it. And it's just a matter of sort of how you can respond to the injuries. And the Jets are fortunate, of course, that they're now a team that has better depth than they've had really since the team returned to Winnipeg from Atlanta, where they can handle. If this was a year ago, if this was 2 years ago, an injury to Mark Scheifele pretty much
critical
almost ends things.
The doom and gloom around the city.
Right. Instead, Blake Wheeler has admirably gone over to center, and he's really done a seamless job there. Oh. You're able to bring a guy like Matthew Perreault from that quote-unquote fourth line role. He goes into your top six. You know, Sean Mathias and Marco Dano. I mean, how great. You know, we'll see if it lasts. I'm skeptical if it will, but you know, they both come out of being healthy scratches for, you know, 30 games, basically, and they each score in their first game back in the Winnipeg Jets uniform. So those are, you know, unusual stories.
If Buffalo would have scored last night, that would have been...
Well, everybody's going to get a night off then because they come back and score a goal, apparently,
based on the
standings at that point. Just an interesting and odd timing with all the injuries, but you know, if the Jets can get through the month of January, you're closer to Scheifele getting back healthy, maybe another week or two into February at that point in time. Enstrom should be back by that point in time. Tanev should be back before the end of the month. All of a sudden, you're back to having your abundance of players, assuming nobody else is out of the lineup in between, but the Jets will have weathered the storm and will, you know, maybe be at full strength as you head into the stretch run with February, where they, of course, they have that bizarre 10-game homestand, which still to this day I've never seen anything like it in the NHL, to have 10 consecutive days at home, 10 consecutive games at home. I can't think of the last time a team had a homestand that long. Usually homestands maximum 6, maybe 7 games. Mm-hmm. But they're basically in town the entire month of February, which is...
fun for them.
Fun for them. bizarre. But they've had great success on home ice this year.
But luckily they're dominating at Bell MTS Place.
Right. So, you know, those are now looking ahead, obviously, that's into February. So we're still, you know, too far, you know, ahead to really preview that. But it's just the schedule that's on the horizon is interesting. When you look at January, they have two more divisional games. Mm-hmm. They have the Wild and the Blackhawks. That's back-to-back next Saturday, both of them on the road. Mm-hmm. They have 5 games against the Pacific Division. I believe you have the Sharks twice. You have the Ducks. You have the Flames. And you have the Canucks. Mm-hmm. And then you have 3 games against the Eastern Conference. Buffalo twice. That's twice, obviously, in the next 4 days where they play them Friday and then in Buffalo on Tuesday. And then you have the Tampa Bay Lightning at home. Only of those 11 games or 10 games that are left, only 4 of them are against teams that are currently, as of today, in a playoff position. San Jose twice, Anaheim and Tampa Bay. So it's not the most difficult schedule in the world. But then again, anytime you have divisional games against the Blackhawks and the Wild, you keep... You know, you don't think of those teams as sort of also-rans. They're not the Buffalo Sabres of the Western Conference. They're teams that you still, at this point in time, expect to be right in a playoff spot or battling for a playoff spot right up until the last day of the regular season.
Yeah, it's almost Pavlovian. You look at the 12th and the 13th, you see the Hawks and the Wild on the road, and you think to yourself, that's just a meat grinder of 48 hours right there, regardless of the standings. Mm-hmm. And even Buffalo, you talked about Buffalo, the Jets, they haven't been able to dismantle the Sabres like everyone, you know, just believes that they
Sabres won both games against the Jets last
year. And lest we forget what happened, we'll play the audio, but lest we forget the injury that took place
last time the Jets and the Sabres played each other is what, of course, when Jake McCabe laid out Patrick Laine, mm-hmm. causing him to, you know, have a concussion. That was a game the Jets had in hand. It was a Saturday afternoon game, if you recall correctly. Mm-hmm. This is late. Mm-hmm. This is in January last year, about almost a year to the date, I think it'll be. I think it was January 7th, 2017.
Yeah, I thought it was around the 10th.
Maybe it was the 10th, whatever. It's almost a year to the date since that happened, where the Sabres, the Jets had the game in hand. I think they're up 3-0, if I recall correctly. Buffalo comes all the way back, ties the game. Laine gets injured. The Sabres end up winning 4-3. Now, you know, that's a different Winnipeg Jets team, I think they would have to say, than that so far when they've played weaker opponents at home. And you think about what they've done against the Vancouver Canucks recently at home, against the Ottawa Senators recently at home. When they've played weaker opponents at home, they've been very good at you know, dominating those teams. Well, the Jets have another opportunity to do that starting Friday night at home against the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun one. We'll probably see some tracksuits, I assume, in
well,
the stands.
Who knows? You know, I don't know.
I think it's done. Is that played out?
I don't think anybody cares about Evander much anymore.
Yeah, it's just kind of old news now.
Yeah, you know what? It's been long enough. I think this team is happy. Fans are happy with the team they have right here. I don't think anybody's lamenting the absence of Evander Kane.
What if he falls out again in the middle of warm-up?
Well, then, if that happens, I'm sure he'll hear. He's going to get some jeers, but I don't think it's going to be the fever pitch atmosphere that it was the first time he returned a couple years ago.
Yeah.
When the Jets also lost that game, they laid an egg on home ice.
That was tracksuit night.
That's right. When we come back, Bill Hoppe joins us. He covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times Herald and also BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. Much more on the Sabres, the Jets' opponent on Friday night. Up next, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program a good friend of ours, Bill Hoppe, covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times Herald. You can also read his work at BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. Bill, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Bill. Obviously, Jets and the Sabres are going to do battle a couple times over the next week, starting Friday night here in Winnipeg with the return engagement on Tuesday back in Buffalo. You know, we'll talk about the Sabres, but I guess we'd be remiss if we didn't start with looking back at the Winter Classic a few days ago in New York at, what used to be Shea Stadium, City Field there. The Sabres, you know, the quote-unquote home team, even though everyone knows that was just on paper as opposed to in reality. How was the experience for the Buffalo Sabres? This is a team that really has been down in the doldrums for the last half a decade or so. You know, how did they enjoy the spotlight of being on the center stage of the Winter Classic?
So I think they enjoyed it a lot, and I think it was good for them. As you say, they've been maybe the league's worst team over the last five or so years, and they're not in the spotlight very often. And when you think about it, they're kind of an odd choice for the Winter Classic, even though they were celebrating the 10th year of it. But I think they dealt with it well. I mean, it almost feels like a playoff game. There's so much attention. And Kyle Okposo was, after the game, he said that, you know, when they make the playoffs again someday, that they can probably draw on the experience. And I think it was just, I mean, it's been a bad year. They've turned a bit of a corner recently, but it's still been a bad year. And I think that to have something like that in the middle of the season can maybe pick them up. I mean, you guys know from outdoor games that the players love them. Everyone on the team loves them, from the coach, the trainer, to everyone. It's just a fun time. There's the family skate. The guys like wearing their uniforms. It's just a special two or three days, and the Sabres really embraced it.
Bill, you mentioned that it's been a bad year for the Sabres, and I mean, clearly that's the case. It's, you know, even though they're only, you know, 39 games in, this isn't going to be a playoff team at this point. They're 15 points behind the final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. Where is hope coming from for the Buffalo Sabres? I mean, you know, Jack Eichel's on the roster. You think that that's going to change things around after the year where they deliberately tanked for McDavid. You know, where's the hope coming from for a Buffalo Sabres fan?
Oh, my. Well, I mean, there's a few places. I mean, Jack Eichel would be a strong source of hope. And he's, for the last month, 3 weeks here, he's been on a tear, and he's starting to look like the player I think everyone expected. Of course, I said that last year, and he had a pretty so-so, even poor start at times. But for the last month, he's been their MVP. He's been their best player. He's kind of put the team on their back. I think hope also comes from some of their prospects. They have Brendan Gooley, a Western Hockey League star in Rochester, who they're refusing basically to call up, making him pay his dues in Rochester, and he should be a good defenseman. And then there's Casey Mittelstadt, and who's I believe the World Juniors leading scorer, University of Minnesota freshman, eighth overall pick in June, and he's turning heads, and you wonder if by March or April if he's in a Sabres uniform, if he comes out early. So they have some strong prospects. They don't have a huge pool of prospects like they did maybe a few years ago, but there's some strong prospects. And I think hope comes from just time with Jason Botchwell and Phil Housley. Phil Housley has a totally new team, a bad team, 10 new players. Everything's going to take time to get used to. And I think you've seen some signs in the last couple of weeks that they're starting to get used to Phil Housley. There are some reasons for hope, but I still think they're a long way off. I really do. A lot of people thought they could contend for the playoffs this year, including myself. I didn't think they would make it, but I thought maybe they could make a run at it, and that hasn't been the case, obviously.
You know, sticking with this theme, Bill, watching the Winter Classic, one guy who really stood out to me on the Sabres roster is Rasmus Ristolainen. And I mean, how important is this guy for this organization moving forward when you know, just with what they've got in the pipeline and just what he's been able to do recently?
Yeah, he's finally got going here. He was injured early. He wasn't very good, in my opinion, early, but he has a couple goals in the last couple games. And he's starting to look like that 10-goal, 50-point defenseman that everyone thinks he is. And, he's not an analytics darling, and that's been a problem with him over the years, is that I think a lot of people think he's overrated. I think the problem is really that he's just played for bad teams. And when you're playing 25-plus minutes a night on a bad team, facing the opponent's first or second line constantly, you're just not going to have good numbers. But I think as the Sabres improve, there's a good chance that you're going to see Rasmus Ristolainen become a top defenseman. I think on another team, he might be a number two defenseman. He probably wouldn't play 25 or 28 minutes a night most nights. But he's a very good defenseman, and he's their best defenseman by far.
Bill Hoppe is our guest on NHL This Week. Bill covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times-Herald. You can also read his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. You know, Bill, Sam Reinhart was a former second overall pick. This is his fourth season in the NHL, his third full season. Having a very disappointing year after what looked like, 42 points a couple seasons ago, 47 points last year. What's been the problem with Sam Reinhart so far this season, and how do the Sabres get him out of the funk that he's in?
Well, you thought, coming off his first couple of years that he would have 20 to 25 goals, he'd have 45, 50 or more points, and there's been no progress this year. I think the biggest thing with him is I think he's lost confidence, number one, but his talent, so much of his talent comes from the way he thinks the game. He thinks the game on another level. He's not a fast skater, and the game keeps getting faster, and he's just not very fast, and I think that's been a problem for him. I think teams have caught up to him. I don't think he's been able to adjust well, and I think it's kind of snowballed. And he's been all over the lineup, up and down. He started off at center. With his natural position, he was a third-line center for two or three weeks, and he's gone back there occasionally. But he's been back beside Jack Eichel. He scored a big goal the other day. I think a goal on that stage, the Winter Classic, would always be big. But he hadn't scored a goal in 5 weeks. I think it was a 16-game goal drought. So maybe that gets him going. But yeah, he's been a big disappointment, the team's biggest disappointment so far.
Bill, we mentioned Jack Eichel off the start, and he's expressed some frustrations throughout his time, and I'm sure he's not used to suffering as many defeats and this much losing throughout his hockey career. And there's no captain. He wears an A. I'm just curious, with regards to some of the other alternate captains, Ryan O'Reilly and Kyle Okposo, have you noticed or have you heard anything with regards to maybe how these guys are providing a little bit more guidance for a young alternate captain, premier player in the league as, he goes through this learning curve in his career?
Well, I think what the Sabres... The thinking is that Jack Eichel will become captain next year, that they didn't want to give it to him just yet, and so that they have four assistant captains, Zach Bogosian's the other one, and one rotates out every game, and they would be able to share the captaincy and give it to him. And I think they're just trying trying to help him like any young player, give him advice and so forth. And I think sometimes you see Jack Eichel get a little too emotional, and I think probably some of the guys have talked to him about that, and I think he's trying to rein that in a little bit. Because sometimes he doesn't come off looking too good with some of his comments. But my thought is that they'll go to a captain next year, and it'll probably be Jack Eichel, although I think Ryan O'Reilly would make a good captain. I think Kyle Oposa would make a good captain. So they do have options.
Bill Hoppe, our guest on NHL This Week. Bill covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times-Herald. You can also read his work at buffalohockeybeat.com. Bill, Robin Lehner has been the goaltender in Buffalo for a number of years now, you know, after coming over, of course, from Ottawa. He's an RFA at season's end. You know, have we seen the peak of Robin Lehner? Is there still more to his game? And if this is, you know, sort of the peak, or if this is what he is as an NHL goaltender, is it incumbent on the Sabres to get a better backup than Chad Johnson to maybe shoulder some of the burden?
Well, which in regards to Chad Johnson, I actually think he's a pretty good backup. And I've watched him play this year, and I don't think he's really played that poorly. He has bad numbers. He has one win, I know. But I think he's actually been decent. I think it's been a few other things hurting his game. I think mainly the team in front of him. But if he doesn't win, I mean, if we're into February and he has one win, the Sabres could, of course, look elsewhere. As far as Robin Lehner goes, he still has growth in his game. Another level he needs to go to. He has been very good at times. He had a .920 save percentage last year, one of the best in the league. He's been, in my opinion, very good this year. But he's terrible in shootouts. Every shooter scored on him last year. That's not a sign of a franchise goalie, a true elite number one. He doesn't steal games like number one goalies do. He's not the difference enough. So I think there is growth, another place he could go to, but he's been pretty good. That said, the Sabres have Linus Allmark in Rochester. He might be the AHL's best goalie quietly. So they have a decision to make. Do they want to go long-term with Robin Lehner this summer? Do they want to trade him? Do they want to let him split time with Allmark? Something's got to happen, and it wouldn't shock me if they traded him because he's not Jason Botterill's guy. He was a Tim Murray guy. They gave up a first-round pick for him, of course, but Jason Botterill's just not tied to him.
I'm curious, how's Jason Pominville's return been to Buffalo?
It's been pretty good. I mean, he's not the player he was 7 years ago, but he's still a pretty good player. Last year he had a supporting role in the Wild, but he still had, I think, 40-some even-strength points, and that would have been number one on the Sabres. And you saw right away when he came back to Buffalo, that he still had some offense in him. He's been playing with Jack Eichel and Evander Kane a lot of the year. He had 2 goals opening night, and he's cooled off a bit. But he definitely looks like a guy that could still have 20 goals, 45 points, even 50 points. Beyond that, I just think he's good to have for the team. I mean, he's an accountable guy as I've ever been around. He's always been a very good two-way player. He's just a smart player, a good guy to have in the room. He's won on Buffalo before, way back in, you know, 2006, 2007. So he just knows the team. He knows the area. I think it's been a terrific fit to bring him back.
Bill, how about Marco Scandella? He, of course, came over in the trade with Jason Pominville. How has Scandella been on the Sabres' blue line?
He's been pretty good. He's been playing with Rasmus Ristolainen, which is what they expect. He's been playing a lot of minutes. I don't think he's provided maybe the offense they wanted. But as far as a puck-moving defenseman that can play 20-plus minutes on the top pair, they needed that badly, and I think he's been pretty good for them.
Last one for you, Bill, and we appreciate your time. Of course, Evander Kane, would be remiss if we didn't ask about him. He's atop everybody's trade bait board, given that he's an unrestricted free agent at season's end. Two-part question. One, is it a foregone conclusion that he gets traded and that the Sabres don't maybe try and sign him to a contract extension? And then two, what can the Sabres realistically expect to get in return for a guy who seems like he'd be a pure rental as we're sitting here on the third day of January?
Well, I would say it's more likely than not he'll get traded. I just can't see the Sabres, who they really don't have a ton of cap room when you examine things. I can't see them giving him Evander Kane would get 6 years, 7 years, $6-7 million a year on the open market. I can't see them giving that to him, especially when they're so far away from a cup, even the playoffs. So I suspect he'll be traded. He's been so good this year. I mean, he scored whatever, almost 20% of their goals, and they're the league's lowest scoring team, you wonder where they would be without him.
Yeah.
What are they going to look like? Are they going to score one goal a night without him? But I think they need to trade him. I think the return, he's probably the top rental out there. Is he worth a first-round pick from a contender, a first-round pick that would be maybe in the 20s? Is he worth a top prospect or two? Is he worth 3 second-rounders and a decent everyday player? I'm not really sure, but my thought is that he would probably be the most coveted player at the deadline.
Bill Hoppe covers the Buffalo Sabres for BuffaloHockeyBeat.com and the Times Herald. Bill, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening.
All right, thanks, guys.
Take care, Bill. Thanks again. When we come back, we'll discuss more on the Jets and the Sabres. They do battle on Friday night. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Jurgensen to tap it in. And we have a tie game here in the third. Big collision at center ice as McCabe steps in the puck for Laine.
This is scary. Patrick Laine just got absolutely laid out.
Not so good memories for the Winnipeg Jets, for Patrick Laine, and for their fans the last time the Jets and the Sabres met last January. Patrick Laine gets laid out by Jake McCabe. The team loses a very winnable game to the Buffalo Sabres. The Jets look for redemption. They look for revenge coming up Friday night against the Buffalo Sabres with the rematch Tuesday night back in Buffalo. A very winnable game for the Winnipeg Jets. Playing the Buffalo Sabres, all due respect, is as close to a free space on the bingo card as you get in the NHL nowadays. Doesn't mean you can obviously take them too lightly, because any team can beat any other team on any given night. Mm-hmm. But the Jets, to their credit, have been very good this year at dominating weaker opponents. I mean, they've played the Ottawa Senators at home, took care of business. Played the Vancouver Canucks at home, took care of business. It's another opportunity coming off of the loss in Denver last night. They get today off, back tomorrow for practice. Not the world's busiest time in their schedule, that they should be at full flight against the Buffalo Sabres, a team that's going to be playing coming off of back-to-back as they play Thursday night in Minnesota.
Yeah, I was going to say the Jets will be getting the Sabres on game two of a back-to-back, and you're hoping that we just don't see the regression that we've been used to seeing in years past of when the Winnipeg Jets have played down to some of their lower opposition levels, where you're sitting at either your seat, or we're sitting here or at the arena, and you're thinking to yourselves, this looks absolutely nothing like the team we saw a few days ago.
Mm-hmm. When they play against upper echelon teams.
Precisely. Yeah. And so you have to hope that they've kind of turned the corner with regards to that mentality, and they're able to just keep it rolling and keep doing what they've been able to do, and just, use their feet, use their hands, use their speed, use their physicality. 81 shot attempts versus Colorado. Mm-hmm. You just carry that effort forward, and you're looking all right heading in, but like you said, nothing comes easy in the NHL. They know it. They've seen these kind of games before where you suffer a 2-1 loss and
dominate the play.
Exactly.
But you heard, it was interesting, you heard Bill Hoppe in the previous segment say Robin Leonard hasn't stolen any games for the Buffalo Sabres. And sometimes you do run into a goaltender. Had he not gotten injured last night, Semyon Varlamov certainly looked like he might have been able to, quote-unquote, steal that game for the Colorado Avalanche. But you have Robin Leonard, who, according to Bill Hoppe, who watches that team night in, night out, knows him better as well as anybody else, says their goaltender just hasn't stolen any games, doesn't seem to have that sort of capability in his game. You wonder if the Jets, know that or watch tape of that, and they say, if we're able to continue to pump that number of shots, that shot attempts at a goaltender like they did Tuesday night in Denver, they're going to be in a pretty good position against a team like the Sabres, who certainly don't score a lot, dead last in the NHL in terms of goals for, with only 31 goals for so far this season.
Absolutely.
Pardon me, 86 goals for, 31st in the NHL.
And what's one thing that the Jets are have been very good at this season? Scoring first at home.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can plant that seed of doubt early, maybe, you know, we've seen Robin Leonard lose his cool a few times. He's a hot-headed guy. He's a fiery competitor, which sometimes goes against him, especially when you're a goaltender and it's all about, you know, equilibrium, peace of mind, all that, you know, maintaining
routine,
that
routine, as we saw with Carter Hart in the World Juniors needing to be the last guy.
Can we talk about that later? Like, that is just the silliest thing in the world. Anyways.
We'll talk about World Juniors in the second hour, so yes, we can talk about
but
that.
But yeah, if the Jets can pounce early and maybe put that seed of doubt early into the Buffalo Sabres, you know, maybe 1-0, possibly 2-0, get a power play goal. Their power play has been rolling as of late. I think
when you play a team like the Buffalo Sabres, a team that's struggling, a team that is certainly lacking in confidence, the key is to not give them any hope.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sabres played well on New Year's Day mm-hmm. in the Winter Classic, and they lost in overtime. But, you know, for a Buffalo team, they'll probably take that. They're 10-20-9 on the season. This isn't a good hockey team.
No.
So the Jets, who are a good hockey team by all accounts so far this year, they are a good hockey team. They're atop the Central Division, albeit Nashville with their games in hand, whatever. The Jets need to just get out there and, you know, eliminate any hope for the Buffalo Sabres. And that's key to your comment there, Sean, about a good start. And, you know, you jump on them early. Maybe, who knows what happens when they play tomorrow night in Minnesota. But the Jets are going to be rested. The Sabres won't be rested. And it's just an opportunity to really take advantage of an opponent that is, frankly, not as good as you are.
Absolutely. And say what you will about Jack Eichel. You know, some people say he's got that immature streak, you know, whether or not he should have been awarded the contract he was awarded so early. But one thing's for sure, the guy's a player. The guy's an absolute stud on the ice. And for some of us out here on the West Coast, in hockey, don't get to watch the Buffalo Sabres as
often. People aren't turning into the Sabres games on a casual basis
often. But we're gonna watch Jack Eichel do some pretty nifty things, and they're going to have to keep a close eye on him because he can make you pay.
And the Jets did a good job against Connor McDavid the last two games against the Oilers. And Jack Eichel's not Connor McDavid, but he's a hell of a damn good player. So they know that the Sabres don't get really any speak of secondary scoring. It's Eichel and it's Kane. They've accounted for 30 of the Sabres, 86 goals this year? So they've accounted for 30 of the Sabres' 86 goals. You know that you can focus your attentions on those two guys. You're at home. You get the matchups you want mm-hmm. in terms of last change. The Jets should feel as though they're in a pretty good position on Friday night at home in terms of matchups entering the game.
I'm glad you brought up matchups because I wanted to talk about this in our opening segment. I forgot to bring it up. Did we see that kind of go against the Jets last night in Colorado with Brian Little on the ice at the end of the game? Do you recall what I'm talking about, where Brian Little was on the ice and then
Maurice was upset about not being able to get the line change in?
Yeah, so like you talked about, and that came back to, I don't want to say bite the Jets in the butt, but they didn't get the matchup they wanted and they lost the faceoff. And
matchups, it happens. I mean, I'm not. Coaches put an emphasis on matchups. If they didn't, you know, if it wasn't important, they wouldn't put the emphasis on it.
Mm-hmm.
You're at home. This is not a very good Buffalo Sabres team. It's real, to be blunt. And the Jets have a stiffer competition coming in town on Sunday afternoon mm-hmm. against the San Jose Sharks, one of the few teams this month that is in a playoff spot that the Jets play. So the Jets need to just really, you know, bear down, focus on the Sabres. It's the kind of game, though, that if things go well for the Jets or things go as expected, I wouldn't expect the Jets to have to shorten their bench on Friday against the Sabres, simply because the Sabres, it's unlikely that the Jets should be chasing that game. I mean, it's possible, because anything's possible, but if the Jets are in the position where they have to chase that game, something has probably gone fairly amiss throughout the course of the first 20 or 40 minutes.
Yeah, and you can probably expect to see, Jack Eichel can probably expect to see a healthy dose of Adam Lowry alongside Andrew Kopp and whoever else, what other checker is going to be assigned by him, because that line has been absolutely phenomenal at shutting down some of the top lines that the Jets have played, and I can assume, or I assume that they're the same will go forward tomorrow.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting note coming out just now from Elliot Friedman in the course of his 31 Thoughts column that just got published. Sounds like there's a possibility of the Carolina Hurricanes and the Winnipeg Jets playing in Finland next season. Makes sense, of course.
Pack your bags.
Which the pack your bags, Bayak and Munns and Edmonds. Sebastian Aho and Tuvo Teravainen, of course, with the Carolina Hurricanes. The Jets with Patrick Laine. So, Elliot, nothing guaranteed, but Elliot speculating that the Jets and the Carolina Hurricanes might play overseas in Europe in Finland next season. And of course, you know, Teemu Selänne, I'm sure, would be prominently mentioned in that as well.
That'll be interesting because don't forget Joel Armia.
Joel Armia, of course.
And next year, potentially Christian Vesalainen,
he's impressed in the World Juniors, and we'll talk about that during the second hour of the show as well. Anything food for thought, something to keep an eye on, maybe if you're planning a European vacation.
Ooh.
You build it around a Jets Hurricanes game in Helsinki or something like that. Before we go to break, should make mention this segment was brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. When we come back, Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star, I sat down with him earlier today to talk about the World Juniors. We'll play that interview for you next. You're listening to NHL This Week, hour number two up next on TSN 1290. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. Our guest now is Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star. He's covering the World Junior Hockey Championships in Buffalo. As we all know, Canada set to do battle against the Czech Republic tomorrow night in a semifinal. Kevin, good evening and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure, Kevin. Always appreciate you giving your time. As I mentioned, Canada versus the Czech Republic in the semifinal tomorrow, Sweden and the United States in the other semifinal. You know, Canada seems as if it's had a pretty easy path to this point in time in the tournament. Their only loss, of course, that overtime defeat to the United States in the outdoor game. How would you assess the play of Team Canada thus far during the tournament?
Well, the one good thing, and I think you're right, they've had the easier path to the semifinals. Even the schedule worked out really well for them, giving them the extra 2 days when everybody else had to play on New Year's Eve. So they've had an easy go of it. They've had a couple of romps. But what you saw in the romps is they didn't take their foot off the pedal. They kept going. They kept going at Denmark. They kept going at Switzerland. They didn't take it easy. And that's all you can really ask for when you're playing one-sided games like that. They didn't get off their game. They didn't take easy chances. They didn't try to look like heroes and make incredible plays. They kept the game simple and they kept going. Now, the Americans will say they're battle tested. I mean, they've played the Russians already. They'll get the Swedes. So they will have had when they lost to the Slovaks, they gave themselves a much tougher road to the gold medal game. So yes, other teams have had a bit harder and might feel more battle tested. But given what Canada had, the schedule that they earned, they've done as good with it as they possibly can. They feel really good about themselves. They've got four lines that can score. They've got a mobile defense, and Carter Hart's given them all the goaltending they need. So I think they feel really good about themselves, but I think you can safely say the Czechs feel good about themselves, the Swedes feel good about themselves, and the Americans feel good about themselves because they're still standing at this point.
Absolutely. It's easy to feel good about yourself when you're in the Final Four. How much stock do you put into that battle-tested argument? Because, you know, if you really look back at it, Canada hasn't played a truly challenging game now in half a week, maybe a little bit more than half a week. And even that game was in such unique circumstances, it being outside at New Era Field. You know, when Canada faces their sort of first bout of adversity, is that going to be sort of an interesting barometer to how they handle it?
Well, yes, and you know, maybe they are so good they won't face that adversity. I don't
True
think
enough.
That's the case, but I'm not sure the Czechs are going to give them even that much of a battle, even so they probably won't face it till the gold medal game. But I think they've got backbone. I mean, they've got seven players back from last year. They've got a lot of high draft picks. They've got a lot of guys who are champions at other levels. I think they know what it takes to win. But you're right. They you know, if a team goes up on them 2-0, how do they respond? What do they do? Do they get off their game? Do they start taking stupid penalties? That's been the one sort of flaw for the team, is some sort of dumb emotional penalty. It will be interesting to see. You know, maybe the Czechs score first. You never know. You know, the first shift, the momentum swings, take the crowd out of it, all that kind of stuff. So it could happen, and we'll see if they have the backbone for it.
Kevin McGran, our guest on NHL This Week, talking about the World Junior Hockey Championships. You mentioned Canada's opponent, the Czech Republic. They're led offensively by Martin Nekas. He's got 9 points in five games, second overall in the tournament. Is he the driver for the Czechs offensively? And you know, do the Czechs need to sort of shut this game down like they did against the Finns yesterday in getting that stellar goaltending and that being the key to their victory?
Yeah, the Czechs are kind of an intriguing team to me because I kind of picked them at the beginning of the tournament as the dark horse potential medalist, simply because this group 18 months ago won the Ivan Hlinka Memorial Tournament in Czech. It's the first time the Czechs actually won their own tournament, And it was this group that did it. About half the team is from there to here. So these guys have proven to be the equals of their counterparts at this age level. They deserve to be here. They have dynamic players like Nekas and some others. Christian Reichel's having a very good tournament for them. They seem to have a good balance, but yeah, they need to play a disciplined game against Canada. They need to play defensively sound, and they need to capitalize on the chances when they get them. I would bet Canada will outshoot them, outchance them, but it could very well just come down to a lucky bounce or the better goaltending.
Well, there certainly isn't any history between Canada and the Czech Republic when it comes to the semifinals and excellent goaltending at all. Dominik Hasek in 1998, of course, comes to mind, but I think we're a long way away from that at this point. From the Canadian perspective, though, you mentioned they have the balanced scoring and they go really four scoring lines deep, and you never know who the guy is that's going to strike for Canada offensively. You know, from your perspective, is there, you know, when Canada needs that goal, when they need a go-to player to score for the team, who is that guy on this team?
Well, Drake Batherson's had a pretty good tournament in terms of scoring, but I wouldn't look at it so much as a go-to goal, a player that provides the go-to goal. I kind of look at it as the go-to play. And for me, Kel Makar has been, or Makar, has been sort of a difference maker on the blue line. He seems to sort of pull a move out of his hat to get his team out of trouble or to create a scoring opportunity for somebody else at some rare moments. So I've really enjoyed watching him play and progress. I've always been a Jake Bean fan on the blue line, and I think he's doing well. And I think if they get Victor Meade back, I think they'll need him against the Czechs because he can be a difference maker too on the blue line.
Kevin McGran, our guest on NHL This Week, talking about the World Junior Hockey Championships. Kevin, goaltending is always a big topic of conversation, especially as it relates to Canada. Carter Hart has been the man in net for Team Canada so far. There was, you know, much to do about the, you know, superstition thing yesterday with leaving the ice early versus being the last guy on the ice and everything like that. You know, how much of that is distraction, and how much do you think that, you know, Carter Hart really relies on that sort of superstitious kind of aspect to the game?
Well, I think Carter Hart was amused by the line of questioning more than anything. he was pretty forthright in saying it's not a superstition, it's a routine. And it was just part of what he does, and he was happy to be the last guy off by circling back out onto the ice. But he's not going to let it get to him, and I believe him on that. I believe he just has a way of doing things, and he'll adapt to other guys' ways of their doing things and make it part of his routine. So I don't think the Czechs would have much success getting into his head by leaving the guy on the bench for intermission. I think that would be kind of foolish. Even the Swiss coach wasn't very impressed with his own goalie doing that because he said, we need to prepare for the second period. We're down 3-0. What are you doing not joining the team? So I think it was pretty amusing for all of us to see it happen. And Carter Hart himself was amused that we cared that much about it. I don't think it's a superstition that'll get him off his game. It's just a routine that he likes.
From the media perspective, that Swiss coach might be the MVP of this tournament.
Yeah, he is a breath of fresh air from my perspective. I mean, I was in the first scrum with him when he said, basically, they're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. What do you want me to say? They're the best team, like all that kind of stuff. And I couldn't believe my ears. And his body language was such, and the way he was going, like, what do you have to do against Canada? What can we do, right? he was pretty amazing in that front. I don't think it was a tactic at all. I think he was just speaking honestly. I think he just wanted to give his opinion, and he wasn't going to lie. He wasn't going to sugarcoat. He knew for Canada to win, it would require a miracle, and for Canada not to win, it would require a miracle on the part of his team, and he was honest about it, and I had no problem with that. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's not exactly the kind of motivational speaker you want when he's on your side, but I think I think he said what everybody in the rink thought. The Swiss don't have a chance.
Kevin McGran, our guest on NHL This Week, talking about the World Junior Hockey Championships. Kevin, shifting our focus to the other semifinal between the U.S. and Sweden. You know, U.S., Casey Mittelstadt has been sort of the driving force for the United States, but, you know, Brady Tkachuk has also been up there. But the Swedes counter with a couple of really impressive players as well, Elias Andersson and Elias Pettersson. How do you see the semifinal between the Swedes and the Americans shaping out?
I think it might be the best game so far of the tournament. There have been a couple of good ones. Both teams have an awful lot at stake. The Americans, of course, want to get back and please the home crowd, and they've got their own thing going on. And the Swedes just need to get a medal. They have their run of success in the preliminary round, and that's that. Then they sort of fold after that, and I think they want to prove that they're much better than that. When I look at the Swedish team, I look at a team of potential. They've got all-stars everywhere, right? They've got Pettersson and Andersson, like you say. Rasmus Dahlin is something else on the blue line. There's a Leaf prospect, Timothy Liljegren, that's playing really well, too. They're getting enough goaltending. They can score, they can shoot, they can skate. For my money, on paper, they're the best team. They certainly proved it. They finished first overall among all the teams. It's whether they can have that extra notch, that extra gear to do something in the medal round, that'll tell the difference. The Americans have a lot of dynamic players as well. Casey Mittelstadt, like you said, Kiefer Bellows, Logan Brown. They've got some really, really good stuff. And I'm curious about the goaltending in both cases. I think this could be a high-scoring semifinal.
Kevin, last question for you. I appreciate your time. You know, the attendance has sort of been an issue at the arenas in Buffalo. We've seen it, you know, a lot of empty seats dotting the facility there. Did the organizers maybe overestimate what they could charge for a ticket price, reminiscent of the Toronto-Montreal World Junior Championships from a couple years back?
Well, they've done something wrong. I don't quite know. I think the outdoor game worked out okay for them. 44,000 or whatever it was totally fine in that in that stadium. They probably could have gone more. They've run into incredible weather problems here. I mean, we've had crashes on highways keeping people away from the game that were like tweeting they can't get there, and you know they're just across the border or up the road in Buffalo. But I think they made a few huge mistakes here. I mean, like the World Juniors is supposed to be a special tournament for junior hockey, and it's always been treated like that, but. You know, Buffalo and Toronto are pretty close to each other. Mm-hmm. Basically the same geographic area. Buffalo in some ways is kind of a Toronto suburb, and to have this tournament in Toronto, or the Golden Horseshoe as we call it here sometimes, to have it 3 out of 4 years is asking an awful lot of the junior hockey fan to come out and pay these exorbitant prices. I don't quite get why it's like $100 to see this game. I know they're selling it as a kind of an NHL-level product, as a premium product, but they don't have $70 million payrolls to pay. Mm-hmm. They don't have to price it this high. And I think they hurt themselves. They've hurt the tournament. They've hurt the panache of the tournament. There's no atmosphere. There's none. This is a pretty good stadium here. The Sabres have a pretty good stadium. Mm-hmm. And when there's 7,000 or 8,000 people in it, it just looks bad. Like it certainly shouldn't have been in Toronto and Montreal 2 out of 3 years. And they should not have put it in Buffalo, assuming it was a big hit in Buffalo 7 years ago, because the tournament hadn't been to this neck of the woods. Sure. It just simply hadn't come close to Toronto, and everybody was excited to finally get it after the Red Deers and the other actual junior hockey markets had it. So it sort of hit gold, and so then everybody thinks, well, let's just keep doing that. And now they've figured out that doesn't work. You need to be different. I think the outdoor game added a level of a panache, a buzz to this tournament, but for the most part, it's been a dud. And the weather certainly hasn't helped. There's no walk-up crowds to speak of because it was really – outside, today is okay, but up to now, it's been like minus Antarctica weather.
Summer in Winnipeg.
Hey, I think we beat you one day.
Oh, really?
I think we beat you one day. Yeah, it was pretty something. Oh, my God. It was – I mean, my hotel is a block from the rink, and I bundled up every time to go outside. It was just stupid.
Well, you'll be back in the warmth of Toronto sooner rather than later. Kevin McGran of the Toronto Stars covering the World Junior Hockey Championship. Kevin, appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys.
Take care, sure. Kevin. Thanks again.
Line to Timmons. Works across the top, feeds it back to McCarr. Nifty move by McCarr. Walks right in. McCarr shoots, scores! Kale McCarr, a rocket. And it's 2-0 Canada.
We tried. But when you get scored 45 seconds in the first period, then it's a bad start. But overall, just everybody saw it, they're just way better than us.
I love that Swiss coach.
Christian Wolvind.
He's terrific.
It's so sad that we don't get to see him anymore.
I'm a little disappointed about it.
He's been the best part of the whole tournament.
He's been the most entertaining part. I mean, you know, this is what we're so used to, canned responses and generic nothingness, that when somebody speaks honestly, and I mean, what does he have to lose? I mean, the Swiss know that they don't really have a chance, that it would be an upset of epic proportions. It wasn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. Clearly didn't happen. But it was fun listening to him talk about it over the course of the lead into the game and then the aftermath of the game. But Canada, to nobody's surprise, you know, take care of business very easily yesterday against the Swiss in the quarterfinals of the World Junior Hockey Championships, leading into the semifinals tomorrow, where they play another team that is sort of would be heavy underdogs. You know, that it's unexpected that the Czechs are in at this point in time. I think most people would have thought this would be a spot where the Finns would be playing against Team Canada. But the Czechs are going to be Canada's opponents tomorrow, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, puck drop here on TSN 1290 for the semifinal between the Team Canada and the Czech Republic. And then, of course, the other semifinal, Sweden versus the United States. You can hear that game online on TSN1290.ca. That's a 3 o'clock puck drop here. Should make mention, this segment of the show is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. Your thoughts on the World Junior Tournament so far, Sean? I mean, you had the spectacle of the outdoor game being played in a blizzard, you know, a bizarre sort of...
Wasn't into that.
Wasn't into it? You didn't like it?
No. The novelty wore off quickly. And
too much of a gimmick?
Yeah, and just when you got the amount of skill and talent that you have in Canada, USA, and the top players in the nations getting on the ice, playing in an important game, a game that is meaningful,
mm-hmm.
and none of that skill or display is on display, or skill and talent is on display. I mean, isn't it just kind of seem like, yeah, snow is fun, but like, I don't know, maybe the novelty of snow isn't the same to us as it is to some other people because we live in an igloo?
Yeah, I mean, the idea that, you know, it's hockey back to its roots, which is what they like to promote with, you know, the Winter Classic or any of the outdoor games is, you know, these guys, all these players haven't played an outdoor game since they were 5 years old. Once they were targeted or identified as having real talent, they get prime ice time and everything else. They don't skate on the pond, you know, that doesn't exist anymore, you know, to speak of for these guys. It's a gimmick, you know. Take it or leave it, I don't really care. I'm not a huge World Junior guy in general.
I like the World Juniors a lot. I'm a big fan of the tournament.
Yeah.
So you want to watch Canada, USA, and you want to see the best. You want to see the best at what they do competing at the highest level. And I just find that Mother Nature sometimes gets in the way of that, and it's an easy way to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, I don't expect that it's going to be a regular occurrence. I think this was a sort of a one-off. I would hope that, you know, you're not going to see additional outdoor games. I think that the attendance woes that they've been having in Buffalo,
oh, yeah,
and the attendance woes that they had in Montreal and Toronto when they hosted the last couple of years, I think it's time to take this tournament back to sort of the smaller towns that really are the lifeblood of junior hockey. I mean, you know, we know what it was like here with the World Junior Tournament, and you know, we didn't have an NHL team at that point in time. But I mean, the one that stands out, you know, Saskatoon, Halifax, Red Deer. Those are the towns that I think really need this tournament more than the bigger cities, the Vancouvers and Victorias. I don't expect it's going to happen because, you know, the ultimate driving force is the money involved with it.
Yep.
And there's too much money involved with it to take it back to the quote-unquote smaller towns, which I think is a shame. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it greed? I don't know if it's greed. To some extent, it's greed.
It's business.
It's business, yeah.
That's what they'll say. It's business.
Yeah, it's sort of disappointing, though. I mean, it doesn't do anything for me. Take it back to some of the smaller prairie towns. There's no reason why a city like Halifax should be, you know, not ineligible, but should be, you know, sized out of hosting this tournament. They have a great, you know, support system with the Mooseheads. There's no reason why Saskatoon shouldn't be hosting this tournament. I don't know whether it has to reside in one of the bigger cities in Canada or these, you know, larger border towns or whatnot. It's, you know, this tournament was, you know, remember, this could have gone to Tampa Bay as opposed to Buffalo. Mm-hmm. This tournament, that was, you know, when they were in the running. I think it was Columbus and Pittsburgh and Tampa Bay and Buffalo.
Where the All-Star game is this year.
Right.
Tampa.
So, I mean, back when they were awarding this tournament, however many years ago, Tampa was in the running. I would like to see it there. See it in a different marketplace than, you know, these same rehashed towns, that sort of thing.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Halifax Mooseheads, because I'm going to talk about a player, Filip Zadina, on the Czech Republic team, who Canada plays, leading the tournament 4 power play goals, a power play specialist as well for the Mooseheads. So when you talk about the opportunistic Czechs, and you know, you saw them come back to beat Finland in the shootout, discipline, I think, is going to be very important. I know it probably sounds like a broken record. Canada needs to stay out of the box, not provide the lesser opponents the man advantage. But
it's like the Jets against the Sabres on Friday.
I was just going to say, it's just like what we talked about with the Jets and Sabres. Stomp your foot on your opponent's throat early, pin them down, and don't allow them to breathe.
What Canada score? 28 seconds into the game against the Swiss, something like that. I mean, you knew the game was over at that point in time. You know,
guys,
Canada
were scoring with other guys' sticks.
Well, you know, the problem that Canada's going to presumably get through to the finals here, having, you know, really played one competitive game. I guess you can say the first game against Finland was competitive. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a 4-2 final for Canada, something like that.
Correct.
So that was a competitive game, but that was almost, you know, 10 days ago. Mm-hmm. And then you played the States, but it was such a bizarre atmosphere.
Yeah, you can't judge anything from that game.
You're playing it in a snowstorm outdoors. So you know, what do you do with the videotape from that game?
You leave it in the snowstorm outdoors.
Yeah, it's hard. You know, what can you really garner from that game going forward? It's hard to really use that as in scouting. Mm. But Canada's going to likely be in the finals, not really be battle tested. Not really be, you know, in what you would describe as a normal situation. And I wonder if that's going to maybe end up biting them. You know, the States play Sweden tomorrow as well in the early game, in the early semifinal. And, of course, the reason why Sweden and the U.S. play in that early semifinal is that the U.S. chose that one because that gives them longer of a break, because they go back-to-back. They play Thursday, Friday. Friday is the gold medal game. So they wanted the extra couple hours that they get as a result of playing the early game as opposed to playing the late game. I don't know if it makes that much of a difference, but whatever, you know, that's the decision that was made. If you're Canada and you get to the finals and you play the States, well, this is a U.S. team that has had to sort of scratch and claw a little more. They've had more competitive games, had to beat Russia, had to beat Sweden.
Came back to beat Canada.
Came back to beat Canada in that outdoor game. You wonder if the U.S. doesn't have a bit of an advantage at that point in time. They've had the best scorer in the tournament with Casey Mittelstad, the Buffalo Sabres draft pick.
Kiefer Bellows leading the tournament in goals also. He's been an absolute stud.
Brady Tkachuk also having a tremendous
year. I like his game a lot, Brady Tkachuk. He's a player.
Yeah, going to be a high draft pick, probably top 5 pick at this upcoming draft. Mm-hmm. You know, 7 points in 5 games. You wonder if Canada, the lack of testing that Canada has faced in this tournament, might end up costing them, or might end up putting them a little bit behind the eight ball as you get into the gold medal game, presumably, assuming they beat the Czechs. And you see the Czech coach doing similar to what the Swiss coach did, you know, coming out earlier today and saying it's going to take a miracle for us to beat Canada. And he's not wrong, per se, but, you know, most people didn't think the Czechs were necessarily going to get to this point in the tournament. But they've got some offensive firepower. Martin Nekas is second in the tournament in scoring. You mentioned Filip Zadina of the Halifax Mooseheads. They've got, you know, some Libor Hašek on the is, you know, playing very well, you know, from the in terms of setting them things up for them. Their goaltender has been very good. Josef Korenash had a great game against the Finns in the quarterfinals. So you wonder if the Czechs, they got nothing to lose.
Yeah, that's the thing. And they'd lost 10 quarterfinal games prior to this one.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're kind of riding that high of, all right, we're in unknown territory. We're playing with house money.
That's right. I think the real good game, Sweden and the U.S., I think is going to be good game.
That's the one I'm most looking forward to. We get to see Rasmus Dahlin.
Yeah, you're going to be the top pick in this upcoming draft.
And you have some already drafted players, Elias Pettersson, Elias Andersson, just some highly skilled forwards that are really going to be put on display. And that's going to be a real fun game to watch.
Yeah, I think it will be fun. It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out. Of course, it starts 3 o'clock tomorrow. You can listen to that game online or you can watch it on TSN. That's the Sweden and the United States, followed later in the evening by Canada against the Czechs, available here on TSN 1290, also across the TSN television network.
You're the Czech Republic coach. You dress your backup goalie, put a chair on the ice like Ray Ferraro was talking about. You say you don't move until that Zamboni is close to running you over.
It's so bizarre with this Carter Hart thing.
He's going to need to learn how to shake this.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he says it's not superstitious. He says it's routine.
Yeah, for sure.
But at some point in time, your routine has to, you're going to have to come to grips that your routine's not going to be.
Routines change.
Yeah, Sagan and Scheifele have their routine, and eventually one of them, you know, I don't know. I don't think it's anything. But you wonder, especially goaltending is such a mental position, you wonder if, I don't know.
Did he need to come back on the ice after the Swiss goalie went off to mentally reset, or was it all part of the theatrics? Who knows? If he needed to reset,
if he needed to reset, it's more of a problem. If it's part of just having sort of a...
Then fine, whatever. I was laughing, having a great time.
Yeah, if you're realize that you're really dominating this game and you're just looking for a lighthearted opportunity, I don't know. Anything that's going to potentially kind of sort of be a mind game, something I'd be wary of letting your opposition in between your two ears.
Yeah, it's a funny story, something to look out for, and, you know, good on Carter Hart for kind of having a little bit of fun with it, whether or not he was freaking out internally.
If he struggles tomorrow, though, to start or something, then it's going to be a... Yeah. Then you'll be more of a topic of conversation.
Absolutely.
When we come back, we talk about the Oilers and the Habs. When is rock bottom for these two teams as they continue to struggle? You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Tonight was a bad game from our group. Had spurts of good play, but we didn't have everyone on board. And that's frustrating, all things considered, coming back from a road trip and knowing where we are in the standings and knowing how many games we dropped and how many people are struggling. I mean, that's upsetting. We've got to find a way to compete harder, win more battles, because when you use words like compete and hard work, I mean, that's a frustrating part, because we take pride in being a hard-working group, and tonight it wasn't the case.
That's Max Pacioretty of the Montreal Canadiens laying waste to his team's performance. After yet another defeat by the Habs last night, they go down easily, you know, without much of a fight to the San Jose Sharks on home ice. They've lost 5 games in a row now, 4 goals total scored in their past 5 games. It's just an absolute train wreck of a season in Montreal, and it doesn't seem like it's going to get any better anytime soon. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. If you're looking for a place to watch the game, Bernstein's Deli has you covered. They got the big screen TVs. They got great food and drink specials. Check them out Friday night. It's hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's. So the Habs out east are an absolute train wreck. The Oilers out west are an absolute train wreck. Let's start with the Habs. Losers, as I've said, of 5 in a row. They've scored 4 goals total. They had a players-only meeting last night after the game. I'm not sure if that's their 3rd or 4th players-only meeting of the season. It's hard to keep track.
Their daily players-only meeting in Montreal.
At some point, I mean, the season's over. They're not going to be a playoff team. I mean, you can pretend all you want, and you can say, well, if they went on this kind of run, but they're not going to. The question is, how do they move forward? I mean, when it was a couple years ago, and Carey Price went out, and their season fell apart, they supposedly weren't tough enough. They weren't tough enough. They weren't mentally strong enough, so they traded P.K. Subban for Shea Weber. Now, Carey Price has been out of the lineup. Shea Weber, you know, he comes back. Shea Weber's been out of the lineup, and nothing's changed. Are they still not mentally tough enough? I mean, is this mental toughness on the Habs a thing, or is this just a tremendously flawed roster where you have guys who used to be goal scorers? Max Pacioretty comes to mind. He's only got 8 goals in 40 games and hasn't scored since November 30th. Jonathan Drouin only has 5 goals on the year and hasn't scored since November 29th. At some point in time, is this just another example of this is a flawed roster being put together by a flawed general manager in Mark Bergevin? He always seems to get the benefit of the doubt because he's good with the media, sharp dresser. But at some point in time, the roster that he's built is just a flawed roster.
I think you just broke it down perfectly right there, Drew. They can't. It doesn't matter how tough you are if you can't score goals.
Their leading goal scorer.
This is crazy.
Their leading point getter is Alex Galchenyuk.
How many times have we sat here and debated Alex Galchenyuk and his struggles?
For the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season, that's all we talked about. Now, it's not like he's lighting it up. He's got 22 points. The Montreal Canadiens' leading point getter, as we sit here through 40 games, half of a year, has 22 points. That is, I mean, he's on pace to lead the Habs for an entire season with 44 points.
They have 4 goals in their last 5 games.
This is, I mean, if the Vegas Golden Knights were a typical expansion team and their leading point getter only had 44 points, you would say that's embarrassing. Never mind a guy who was a team that's stocked with, you know, high draft picks. It's just a disaster in Montreal.
I can't believe what's transpiring there. And you got guys that are going to go to the net. Like, you got net – like, they're not the biggest guys, but you got guys like Brendan Gallagher and Andrew Shaw, those guys that are going to put their head down and just grind and muck you out some effort and throw the puck on – like, Shea Weber, I know he's hurt, but should be able to blast a puck to the net and then have the tenacious little buggers go and get it.
Well, Brendan Gallagher, who, you know, is a tenacious little bugger – he's got 15 goals. I mean, nothing wrong with that.
No.
No, I mean, he's 15 goals, 6 assists. So, I mean, but that's not his game.
Exactly.
If you're relying on Brendan Gallagher to be your key offensive driver, things have gone terribly
haywire. Thomas Buchanan, it's 16 points as we, like, scroll down the roster. Yeah.
I mean, Jonathan Drouin, you know, I thought the trade made sense when it happened in the offseason. Well, I mean, Sergachev looks like a future Norris Trophy winner. And Drouin has got 5 goals on the season. He hasn't scored since November.
Every time I load my fantasy roster, I'm reminded.
did you draft Drouin?
I did.
I mean, I just don't know what happens with Montreal. They, you know, besides they've talked about it, you know, to the nth degree. It's all they've talked about. Who's going to get traded? It was going to be Galchenyuk. Now is it going to be Pacioretty? I mean, you know, at some point in time, this roster is just not good enough. And so I don't know if a trade is the answer. I don't know if you just let the season play itself out and you start over next year. But if you're Carey Price, how are you happy with the contract extension you signed? Despite the fact, I mean, you're happy with it because you got paid over $10 million a year. But you thought you were signing your entire career with a potential Stanley Cup contender. Now you're looking at a team that's closer to a bottom of the barrel rebuild than anything else.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up Carey Price because one of the best goaltenders in the league, no doubt about it. But how much pressure does that guy have to put on himself every single game now when you're thinking, I can't allow 2 goals or we lose?
Yeah.
I can't allow 1 goal or we lose. My team has scored 4 goals in the last 5 games. That puts the utmost amount of pressure on a goaltender, and eventually he's going to break. You can't mentally withstand that for an extended period of time.
Well, you hear what, you know, you hear Max Pacioretty's comments that we played off the top, and it's one thing to try to have the right effort level and lose. Okay, you, at least you got the effort. Mm-hmm. When you have players talking about effort and
how they didn't have everyone on board,
pride. I mean, you're talking about you're questioning, you know, the professionalism of your colleagues and of yourself. Mm-hmm. That tells me that it's rotten to the core in Montreal.
Yeah, it's stinky in there.
Yeah. Then you flip it over to Edmonton, where, I mean, we saw them on New Year's Eve. That was an embarrassing effort.
They looked like the Senators. It looked like a broken-spirited team when it was a 5-0 win over the Senators and then again against the Oilers.
So the Oilers lose to the Jets 5-0. They match that effort by losing again 5-0 to the Los Angeles Kings last night. I mean, their home penalty kill. And I don't even know how this is possible. I mean, I really honestly don't know how it's possible. Their home penalty kill is 55.6%. They're giving up goals on the power play half the time when they're at home.
And taking 5.
And their road power play, their road penalty kill, rather, is top 10 in the NHL.
Well, that's just mind-blowing. How is that even possible?
I don't even know how it's possible. You're not running different systems at home versus the road. I honestly don't know how that is possible, how you can have historically it would be the worst penalty kill at home in the history of the NHL. And not even by a close margin. The previous worst home penalty kill is the Toronto Maple Leafs back in 08-09 at 69.4%. Mm-hmm. The Oilers right now are 14 percentage points worse.
it's unfathomable. Like it feels fake news. Does it not seem like we're reading a joke?
Yeah.
Like off the Onion.
Like you have to do a double take at the stat to make sure that what you're reading is accurate.
And Connor McDavid pointless now 3 straight, which not the longest of goalless streaks, but in Edmonton,
first time I think in his career he's been pointless in 3 straight games.
Correct. And where we talked about the pressure put on Carey Price, imagine now Connor McDavid wearing that C.
Yeah.
And now he's probably feeling that the fate of the team rests on his young shoulders. And he's given it.
Well, it's another flawed roster. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought everything was going to turn around. You know, they had a brief stint during December where they looked better. Mm-hmm. Well, they've lost, you know, 4 in a row now. They've been outscored 18-6 in those 4 games. They've been blown out 10-0 in their last 2 games.
And when you can't kill a penalty at home.
This is at home.
You're taking a 5-minute major.
I mean, you take a 5, you know, Patrick Maroon takes a 5-minute major.
Suspended for that, by the way.
Suspended for 2 games. Mm-hmm. Takes a 5-minute major last night against the Kings. You're down 1-0 when he takes the penalty. There's 5 seconds to go in the second period when the penalty happens. Interference on Drew Doughty hit him in the head.
Yeah, headshot.
Headshot. Match penalty, 2-game suspension. So you're down 1-0 after 40 minutes. You're going to start the third period on the penalty kill for 5 minutes. You give up 3 goals. You give up 3 goals on the penalty kill.
Yeah, calling Gabrick, Brown, and Kempe, please, to the goal-scoring department.
I mean, it's hard to give up 3 goals on a 5-minute major. It takes skill to be that bad on the penalty kill.
A lot of puck watching.
And to be that bad at home, I mean, 55.6%. It's remarkable. The Oilers are equally a mess. Their season's over as well. Don't talk to me about the runs they're going to go on. It just doesn't happen.
Todd McClellan, before the Jets and Oilers played the second time,
right,
said, "We've allowed 4 goals in our last 2 games. We need to be better moving forward."
4 goals
in the
each game.
Each game.
Each game. They've been so averaging, eight, yes.
Yeah, and then they allowed
5 goals per game
in both games.
Yeah. Yeah. Not quite what Todd McClellan had in mind in terms of moving forward.
He looks a little weathered.
Well, I mean, I don't blame him. This is, you know, they were, the Stanley Cup parade route was already mapped out. They were, you know.
We sat here at the beginning of the year and we all gave them praise and we picked. Yeah.
A lot of people thought that they were, mm-hmm, going to be the Stanley Cup contender.
I thought they were going all the way. I thought they were going.
Yeah. And they've been an absolute train wreck. And, you know, it's hard to determine between Edmonton, Montreal, Ottawa, probably to a slightly lesser extent, mm-hmm, which of those three Canadian teams is in worse shape this season. But man, oh man.
The Canucks are looking like they're in a better position.
Canucks look at least they have a plan. Everybody knows they're bottoming out.
And a heck of a rookie sniper.
Yeah, and a hell of a rookie sniper in Brock Besser. The Oilers, the Habs, and the Senators, Oilers and Habs in particular, just look like they've quit.
Yeah.
When we come back, New Year's resolutions for 2018 in the NHL. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. What a final segment Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor with you in studio. Segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, that's a long time, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. It's a new season, new year, but Rumors still bringing in top-flight comedy. You can check it out their website, rumorscomedyclub.com, for all of the upcoming acts. Be sure to, you know, it's pretty cold outside, but it's always warm in Rumors. The thrill of laughter. Laughter warms you up. I don't know if you've, I've never heard of somebody, you know, oh man, I had a really good belly laugh, but I was really cold while doing it. It just doesn't happen. You get warm when you laugh.
I had a terrible laugh the other day. You never hear that.
No. It's like, I had a great laugh. That was a great, I really needed that laugh. A
lot of good laughs at Rumors.
Lots of good laughs at Rumors Comedy Club, rumorscomedyclub.com. Let's take a look at the out-of-town scoreboard. It's a quiet night in the NHL, given that it's Wednesday night. It's usually a quiet night. And a couple games. The Senators, they're at the Red Wings. 5 minutes into the second period, the Red Wings have a 1-0 lead over the Ottawa Senators. Athanasiou has the seventh goal of the season for the Red Wings to get them on the board. In New York, Madison Square Garden, the Blackhawks and the Rangers are tied at 1-1 apiece after 20 minutes. Nick Holden has his third of the year for the Rangers. Vinny Hinostroza has his second of the season for the Blackhawks. So quiet night in the NHL, quiet Wednesday night in the NHL, as reflected on the only two games in play on the out-of-town scoreboard. Jets, of course, back in action Friday night against the Buffalo Sabres. Game time, 7 o'clock here on TSN 1290. Game available also on TSN 3. Then the San Jose Sharks visit on Sunday afternoon, a matinee between the Jets and the Sharks. A little West Side Story, if you will. Sunday afternoon, a game you can also hear on... Didn't see that coming from a mile away?
No, that was good.
Well, if you're a Jet, you're a Jet for life. If you're a Shark, you're a Shark for life. Yeah,
I'll stop snapping.
Please stop snapping, because I'm going to start singing, and then really you can hear the radios be turned off throughout the city at that point in time.
Or turned up.
Maybe some people want us to get into a little bit of musical theater. My wife says I have a terrible singing voice. Pretty much that's the consensus of everybody, so I'm not going to start singing anytime soon.
Speaking of theater, did you see with Dmitry Kulikov and Adam Lowry?
The Nutcracker at the Royal Winnipeg Ballet? Yeah. That's a nice opportunity, I guess. It's sort of an annual tradition. Mm-hmm. I'm not much of a ballet guy myself. I think I've been to the ballet once, if I recall correctly.
I think I've been once as well.
Yeah.
I respect what they do.
Oh,
it's tremendously
great.
Difficult.
Way more difficult than anything I ever do. And, great for the city to have such a world-renowned ballet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not typically my thing, but, all the power to them. And nice to see the Jets, obviously, with those. It's a tradition, I guess, where people
Bombers are also getting involved. Maurice Leggett did it as well.
Yeah, that's right. Celebrities in the city come out and do the walk-on role during the Nutcracker. First of all, we mentioned Happy New Year to you before, of course, Sean. Any sort of New Year's resolutions that you have for 2018? You plan to eat more, or maybe work out more?
I definitely don't need to eat.
No,
more.
No, you're quite the chef, actually. People should follow you on Instagram. You can whip up some nice dishes every now and then.
Yeah, I can flip a burger too.
Yeah, that would be amateur hour for you. Some of the fancier dishes I've seen you make on Instagram there.
Yeah.
So any sort of New Year's resolutions you got going on for you?
I don't like to set big resolutions just because I often find I disappoint myself when I break them.
Sure.
So I'm going to keep it simple. No coffee in the evening anymore.
Really?
Green tea.
Green tea. Why is that? Is it a caffeine thing?
Just green tea is good for you.
Trying to get
more of those antioxidants, less coffee in the evening.
What about the caffeine? I don't know what the caffeine...
I think caffeine is higher in green tea.
I was going to say, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not the caffeine. It's like,
But coffee's not really unhealthy for you, I don't think.
No, but the sugar...
You're not a black coffee guy?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. That might be a different story altogether.
Oh,
like,
no.
You're making like a milkshake out of that coffee?
Yeah, I make myself a nice little like coffee smoothie.
Really? Well, like, what are we talking about here?
Milk and sugar.
Is it like one milk and one sugar?
One milk, one sugar.
Okay.
So nothing too crazy,
not
but
terrible, but
I'm trying to increase the green tea, decrease the coffee.
Interesting.
That's, yeah.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
How about you?
No, I try not to. I have no willpower at all. So, you know, like I said, maybe eat more, drink more,
you know,
something like that. You know, really, you know, suck down the booze a little bit better. Something like that. You know,
maybe like try a new booze, like get into bourbon or something.
Well, I don't have to get into bourbon. You should know that very well.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Kentucky roots.
I'm my Kentucky roots. So
I'm getting into bourbon.
Really?
I like bourbon.
Well, we can have a good conversation about that. Mm-hmm. What have you been trying lately?
I just whatever throw my way. I don't really have any specific.
You're not a connoisseur yet?
Not yet, but I'm
getting now, are you doing it? Are you just doing it on the rocks? Are you mixing it?
I'm going to go on the rocks.
Okay,
training myself to go on the rocks.
Yeah, you got to do it.
Yeah.
You know, people mix it with bourbon and Coke or something. No. When you have something like that, a good quality bourbon, you know.
I've tried some really good cocktails with bourbon that have kind of like with the citrus and honey and some,
yeah.
There's a whole bunch of craziness out there that I'm kind of getting into now. It's fun.
It certainly is.
It's a lot of fun.
Yes, you marry somebody from Kentucky as I did. You become a bourbon aficionado before you know it.
That must have happened fast.
Yeah, I'm like I wasn't really into the brown liquors at that early on. I was more of a beer and a beer guy at that point. But now that I've got a finer palate. Or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what they call it.
Yeah, I like to pretend as I'm some sort of highfalutin sort. You know, I go with that. New Year's resolutions from a hockey perspective. Anything jump out at you that you want to see the NHL do? You want to see the NHL implement? You know, ESPN had an interesting article
I really like that read. That was a really good read.
Yeah, their NHL. ESPN NHL team, Greg Wyshynski, Emily Kaplan, Chris Peters, sort of went through their New Year's resolutions. We'll talk about that quickly. But from you, from a hockey perspective, anything you want to see the NHL adopt as a New Year's resolution?
I thought Chris Peters had a really interesting idea about promoting the stars, especially when they're playing against one another across more so America. In Canada, we get a lot of the national broadcast, but just from an international standpoint, Canada and the U.S., when the premier stars are playing against each other, get it on TV. Expose the world to these great talents.
I agree wholeheartedly. That's been a bugaboo of mine for a number of years now, is that in the States primarily, they only promote cities. They only promote teams. So, they just want to show Philadelphia against New York or Boston against New York, even if the teams themselves and the players on those teams aren't what you would describe as compelling. The world needs to see more of Connor McDavid and of Austin Matthews and of Jack Eichel, even if they're from, two of those three, even if they're playing in Canadian markets. You know, Buffalo, obviously, a strong hockey market, but not a huge populace. Mm-hmm. So the NHL, I think, totally needs to reevaluate how they go about promoting the game in the U.S. It doesn't matter, from my perspective, it shouldn't matter where the players play. Mm-hmm. Put the best players on national TV, put them in the spotlight. You're going to attract maybe some more eyeballs from somebody who's never seen anybody do the things that Connor McDavid can do on a blade that's, this thin. And you're going to get more casual fans interested in the game as opposed to trotting out a Philadelphia versus Boston or a Detroit versus Chicago when the teams might themselves be kind of boring.
Yeah, you put your best product
out
there for them to take.
It doesn't sound revolutionary, but somehow, some way for the NHL, it is. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. Big thank you to our guests, Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star, and Bill Hoppe of the Times Herald. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on illegalcurve.com, on tsn1290.ca. Subscribe, get it sent to you each and every week on your favorite device. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For producer Chris doing a great job behind the board, for Sean Asor, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.